Hello there, and welcome to The Bitch Fix, a podcast for women who want to jam out on their lives, live in harmony with their hormones, and reclaim their mood, energy, and mojo. I'm Christine McCarroll, functional nutritionist and women's health straight talker, and I'm here to tell it like it is on all things health, happiness, and hormones for women. So shake off that cape, Superwoman, because we're here to launch this thing. Well, hey, girl, and welcome to episode 117 of The Bitch Fix. So I have to tell you guys, I've probably recorded from funny places before. I know I recorded when I was on vacation. I'm recording this episode from my bed. And it's not because I'm sick. It's just because it's nighttime and I got cozy. But I think it's really funny because a few minutes ago, my older daughter came in here. She's like, Mom, why do you keep shutting your bedroom door? What are you doing in here? And I said, I'm trying to record my podcast. And she's like, oh, you're in your pajamas and you have a comfy pillow and you're working. Like, that is so smart. I'm going to go do that. And she went and put her pajamas on and I just went and checked on her and she was in her bedroom doing her homework all comfy. So I highly recommend getting comfy when you have anything to do. It's so good. I love it. All right, so for the podcast today, I wanted to talk about five things that I have learned from wearing a CGM or continuous glucose monitor for 30 days. Now, I've shared before on the podcast that, first of all, I've shared my love of like kind of biohacking and tracking and devices. And I did a whole podcast episode about one of my other favorite tracking devices, which is the Whoop Strap. And by the way, none of this is like sponsored. I'm way too small to be sponsored by anybody. So this is just stuff that I use that I have found super valuable. So I shared what I got from tracking on the Whoop Strap for 30 days. And I wanted to share about some of the things that I have discovered from wearing this continuous glucose monitor. Now, I've talked about it a little bit. We talked about the continuous glucose monitor when I was talking about, am I actually hungry or is it just time to eat? And then there was that interview that I did with Marty Kendall as well. And I was talking about wearing that continuous glucose monitor. So I have tracked blood sugar in various ways for more than 5 years. And I do this off and on. So I don't consistently always track my glucose. But as someone, first of all, who has a very strong family history of blood sugar problems and somebody who also tends to get weird blood sugar if I'm not super careful, this is just something that I keep coming back to. And I find this to be, you know, kind of what I do with a lot of the different kinds of tracking that I do is I'm not like constantly doing five different things of tracking all the time. I usually have two or three things that are kind of my focus for whatever reason. And sometimes I'm not really doing anything. Like probably at the end of this month, I'm going to take a break from everything. I'm actually going to do a whole podcast episode about that in the next couple of weeks. But there's just different kind of phases that I go through on what I'm tracking. And so with the blood sugar tracking, I have tracked in a couple of different ways. So I started out because I don't even think for anyone besides somebody who had like maybe type 1 diabetes, I don't even think like a continuous glucose monitor existed 5 years ago, 6 years ago. And so what I was doing was just the traditional finger stick checking your blood glucose. And the way that that works, if you didn't listen to any of the other episodes, is you basically just get a device. It pokes, you have like a little poker, you poke your finger. It doesn't hurt, you guys. It's seriously not that bad at all. You get a little drop of blood and you put it on a testing strip and you insert it into this little device, like a little sensor tracker. And there's probably a fancy word for it that it's not coming to my head. So it will tell you your readings. It'll tell you basically what is your blood sugar level. And you're looking for a blood sugar that is not too high because that is hyperglycemia. That's too much sugar in your blood, often preceded by something like insulin resistance. So people who are on the road to maybe getting some dysregulation to the point of having type 2 diabetes might be having higher blood sugar. And then of course, if you have a diagnosis, if you have type 2 diabetes, for sure, you're going to be seeing those higher blood sugar numbers. But a lot of people are also what they find out is that their blood sugar might be going quite low. And this actually is also true for diabetics. So it's entirely possible because it's the regulation mechanism overall that is messed up. It's not just the blood sugar being high all the time. It is the mechanism that's regulating blood sugar can be out of whack. That is going to be contributing. So there's a lot of times for people who have diabetes, and we think of that, and it's true, as really being a disease of high blood sugar, but it can also really reflect in people having these crashes, these tanks of super crazy low blood sugar. So what you can see if you're tracking your blood with one of those finger stick devices, and this is like something that people, again, who are diabetic have done for decades, right? I don't even know when the first, I should have looked that up, when the first like finger stick test came out, but I know it's been decades that people have been tracking their blood sugar this way. And these continuous glucose monitors are relatively newer to the scene. And essentially, rather than being something where you have to keep poking your finger, you put this sensor in your arm. And it's on, kind of sits on the back of your arm. It looks like a really big button, and it just hangs out there and you don't really feel it. It's not painful. Again, kind of like the finger stick. It's even less, right? Like every once in a while, I might hit my finger stick a little bit wonky and like, oh, I can like feel that little pinch. I have like literally never felt anything remotely uncomfortable with the continuous glucose monitor. So you put it onto your skin. There's a filament, which is like, I thought it was a needle for the very first one I got a couple of years ago. It's not a needle, you guys. It's like, I don't even know what the material is, but if you think of the word filament, like it's something very, very thin that goes just right under your skin. And so you attach that, it goes under your skin. There's a little button looking thing on top, and then there's adhesive around it. So it just kind of sticks on your arm. It's like a big old sticker. And then there's either a sensor that you have with it, or you can get an app on your phone and you can just scan it anytime. So rather than having to keep poking your finger constantly over and over again, which is what you'd have to do if you were using the traditional kind of finger stick blood glucose monitors, this is cool because you just put it on and then you can constantly you can scan anytime you want, right? And so for me, as somebody who's like a complete data nerd and I'm really interested in what's happening with my physiology, I am tracking all the time, right? I want to track first thing when I would get up in the morning. I want to track before I eat breakfast. I want to track after I eat breakfast. I want to track after exercise and before exercise. And I kind of just like love all of this data that I can get from this device, right? And so it's just amazing to me to be able to do it all the time. So I enjoy using that continuous glucose monitor. And again, I just wear it and I can check whenever I want. So when I've used this before, I've done it for periods of like 2 weeks or a month. I'm actually kind of in this cycle now where I'm about to put on my next one. It'll be, I want to say like 6 weeks total that I will have had one on. And I might continue. Like, I don't know. I might actually just keep doing it for a few months because it's really helpful and useful. But this is an episode to sell you on a continuous glucose monitor. Although if you are interested in getting one, I will let you know. First of all, it is a prescription device. So it's considered a medical device. The finger stick thingies you can buy off Amazon. You could go to Walgreens or CVS or whatever and like grab one. And those are easy to come by. The continuous glucose monitor is a prescription. There is a company that I use that facilitates getting a prescription. So I will link up to that in the show notes. No association with them either, other than that I use them and have been happy. But if you want to talk to your doctor about getting it, it is, again, a prescription-only device at this point. However, I do think that I've seen a lot of interest kind of growing in the wellness industry around the continuous glucose monitor. So I would guess that there is going to be some pathway where it is a much more accessible type thing in the pretty near future. I already think it's relatively accessible if you really want one. So I wanted to share 5 things that I noticed. And these are not to sell you on getting one of these, but so that you can start to just think about your own physiology, right? Think about how might things that you are not given credit for actually impacting your physiology. And so like what was really interesting to me, and I came up with these 5 things, but I'm sure that there were many more. 5 is just an easy number. But what was so interesting to me is a lot of the stuff that I found out in my own body, either like I already knew from reading the literature, but it's different when it's your body, right? Like you can read the science all day long. Like I'm super into reading literature. That's a thing I do. I geek out on that, but it's really different to see it in your own body or to feel it in your own body. Totally not the same thing. So that's one thing. And then, you know, like similarly, I've had an experience of like being able to check my blood sugar with a finger stick, maybe 4 or 5 times during the day, but really seeing it like 10 times, maybe over the course of the day, I can get a lot more kind of granularity around this data. So the first thing that I noticed that I wanted to talk about is that it's not actually always this hourly pattern that I started to really notice. Like it wasn't like that the things that were changing hour to hour, even in relationship to like what I was eating, but more what was happening like day to day based on my, all of my lifestyle and even things I had eaten the day before. Right. I also noticed things with my menstrual cycle. So when I started looking at my patterns over the course of multiple days or patterns over the course of a couple of weeks, or even what was the phase of my menstrual cycle that I was in, I could start to see a lot more interesting information. So whereas, yes, it's interesting to see, okay, this one kind of carbohydrate might spike my blood sugar up significantly an hour or 2 hours after eating, I could also notice, let's say I had a really stressful day or really tough workout, I could see what that did to my blood sugar the next day or even 2 days later, right? And you don't get to see that if you're just tracking like for a handful of days, or if you're even just, you know, like tracking kind of before and after meals. These are the sorts of patterns that emerge when you are looking over time. So again, what I really started to see was it wasn't necessarily just what had happened in that immediate moment that was having an impact. It was kind of just overall aspect. And so like with blood sugar, I'm always thinking about this as like a fuel gauge, right? Like, do I have fuel on board? Is there glucose running around my bloodstream? Do I have this energy that I need for doing whatever I need? Do I have glucose to send to my brain to be thinking? Do I have glucose to send to my muscles to exercise? Do I have, you know, energy? And again, some of that is going to come from that immediate food that you just ate, but your body is way smarter than that. So even during periods where I was fasting, or it doesn't even have to be fasting where it was like, I didn't eat for a whole day. It would be like, okay, I hadn't eaten for 12 hours, or I had, you know, eaten breakfast and I was having a very late lunch. That is a form of fasting because you're not eating. And most of us, at least most Americans, are eating kind of ridiculously frequently. Like we just never stop eating. There's always something in our mouths. And so we don't ever get to see blood sugar come down. But when you go for a period of time, like you go for, you know, again, like from an early breakfast to a late lunch, that is a sort of a little mini fast in there. It's not like a full fast, but you're just not eating. And fasting is just not eating for a period of time. And I could see what would happen to my blood sugar when that would happen. So again, kind of seeing like what would happen that day, but then also seeing, okay, how does that affect me the next day or the day after when something like this has gone on for a couple of days. It was so interesting. So first thing I was going to say is just that our blood sugar is much more intricate and more complex than just what you ate an hour ago. So your body is doing a lot more work, and I just got an appreciation for that. So that was number one. All right, number two thing that I really discovered was around sleep. And this wasn't, again, like none of this was like shocking. Like it wasn't like news, like, oh my God, I can't believe that's what happened. It's more like it was just like this confirmation of what I already knew. And again, it was just so interesting to see in my own body. So I have known that sleep is incredibly important, first of all, for everybody. I call sleep vitamin S. And I think that a whole lot of us, especially as women who might be doing things like taking care of kids and running households and having jobs and maybe taking care of parents or something like that, like we hold a whole lot of responsibility. And something that a lot of women do is when they're looking for time, the sleep is where they cut it from. They start trimming back on their sleep time, because either it's the only place and time that they can find for themselves, or they're just looking for any hours to spare and they think that sleep is going to be the way to go. So I have known for years that my body does really poorly when I do that. I also have this bad history of doing that shit, right? Like of not sleeping well, of doing that. I mean, this is why I know, right? Because I did this shit for way too long. So trying to pull away from sleep to give to other things, that I need a pretty significant amount of sleep. And if my sleep is disrupted, my blood sugar can be dysregulated for an entire day. Again, maybe even 2 days, I will see some dysregulation. And so again, it was like, I knew that that happened, like theoretically, but to see it for me, like over time consistently, that if I get less than like 7.5 hours of sleep. And that doesn't mean, by the way, I'm in bed for less than 7.5 hours. Like I have to be in bed for like usually like 8 to 8.5 hours to get 7.5 hours of sleep. Thank you, Hoopstrap. Learn that too. But if I'm not getting that much sleep, I'm going to see blood sugar dysregulation the next day, right? So blood sugar regulation is really tied to sleep. I knew that, but then I get to see it. So different. So the third thing that I discovered was just how very sensitive I am to exercise and movement. And I consider this a real positive for me. So again, as somebody who's kind of struggled with blood sugar regulation, if I'm not being super mindful and careful, I tend to high blood sugar. I have this family history of type 2 diabetes, like multi-generational. I have always focused on the carbohydrate, the sugar piece of this, which is definitely step one. So if you are somebody who struggles with blood sugar or insulin or anything like that, for sure, the food is step one. But this movement piece was so huge. And I think I had mentioned this before because I had noticed this the last time I was wearing a CGM a few years ago. I actually wasn't the last time, but another time when I was wearing a CGM. And what I found was even doing something like a pretty chill flow yoga class that was like not at all, like it wasn't hot yoga. It wasn't like some sort of power yoga. It was like seriously like a chill Sunday morning yoga class. If I did that fasted, so that if I didn't eat anything before I went to that yoga class, my blood sugar would be in the toilet when I would come out of there. So that was a message to me that I don't tolerate exercising fasted very well. Now, again, I know this. I always recommend that women eat something within an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours of, and depending on your menstrual cycle and some other things, but before you're going to go work out, this is just a thing where women are a little bit different from men. Men can work out fasted a lot of times, no problem. For women, pretty bad idea for a whole lot of reasons. So I'm not going to actually spend this podcast episode talking about don't work out fasted, but I'm just going to tell you it's a bad idea. And I had discovered that already from doing, again, just like this chill flow yoga would send my blood sugar really in the toilet if I hadn't eaten something, if I was doing this fasted. So it was fascinating to me is trying out for doing, you know, doing this longer period with the CGM, when I would do A, different kinds of movement, and B, different kinds of fueling before that movement, what would happen to my blood sugar afterwards? So I'll give you an example. We did this little neighborhood turkey trot on Thanksgiving here. And so basically it was just like a bunch of people from the neighborhood got together and did this little turkey trot around our neighborhood. You guys, this was not hardcore. Okay. I was not running. It was a 5K. I didn't run this 5K. I had intentions that I might, but a combination of like a whole bunch of kids running around, then I had my dog with me. It was just like a hot mess. My knee started hurting. Like I think I ran for like 3 blocks, right? I did not run. So I mostly just walked briskly. I walked briskly for 3.1 miles with my dog on a cool, but not ridiculous Thanksgiving morning. Same thing. I had actually eaten. I had made a point because I thought I was going to try before the dog came along. I thought I was going to try to run this whole thing. And so I had fueled up, I thought, pretty well before I did it. I had, you know, I got up early and I ate like maybe 2 hours before we went out. But we got back, blood sugar in the toilet. And it was so interesting to me, like how much I responded to that. And so again, I saw this kind of over and over that if I would if I was not careful to be appropriately fueled before my workouts, my blood sugar would really tank down. So I started learning like, okay, well, how do I need to balance like a little bit more protein, for example? So I was eating more carbohydrate and a smaller amount of protein before my workouts. It turns out I needed to actually bump up that protein just a little bit, not crazy, but bump up the protein a little bit and then still keep that, those carbs in there to be able to stabilize my blood sugar throughout a workout. So those are just things that I learned about my own physiology. And again, everybody's going to be a little bit different. So this isn't like what I wanted to share with you is not universal truths. It's that we all have this bio-individuality and we're all going to respond a little bit differently. And it's cool to know, right? So different types of movement, but also fueling before that movement, super important and really a bad idea. So this is a blanket statement I am going to make. For the most part, women, bad idea to work out fasted. So not always hourly pattern. Sometimes it's daily. Sleep, massive impact, and then movement. All right, fourth thing that I learned was different kinds of alcohol really had a different kind of effect on my blood sugar. And again, now this is something I had shared back when I was talking about my 30 days with the Whoop. And, you know, first of all, just learning that even small-ish amounts of alcohol really jack up my recovery. So the Whoop strap looks at your recovery. You get a score for recovery. And then what they're recommending for what they are calling strain, which is just like how much exertion should you have during the day. And so for me, you know, I found out that my recovery would be totally tanked if I had alcohol, especially if I had, you know, more than maybe one glass, and especially if I had it late at night and it was closer to bedtime. So I can do okay. Like I still don't do amazing, but I can do okay with, you know, a smaller amount of alcohol with food earlier in the day. And then my body does worse and worse naturally the more I have, and then the later it gets in the evening. So those are things that really start to jack me up. Well, similarly with my blood sugar, you know, unfortunately, because I love it, like red wine just doesn't work for me very well anymore. And I am really sad about that because I love red wine. And I try not to drink, you know, huge tons of it all the time. And there was definitely a time in my life when I drank way more than I would want to or think is healthy of red wine. But even just those more moderate amounts, still red wine has a more significant impact on my blood sugar. White wine tends to have a much, much lower impact. So I am mostly sticking, if I'm going to drink wine, I'm sticking with white wine. And then something like, my new favorite thing ever is this June Shine kombucha. It's like a hard kombucha that's not super sweet. Anyway, I love it. It's my like little special occasion alcohol treat drink. And it's so good. There's a bunch of flavors. Again, I have no money coming to me from June Shine, although they should probably sponsor this podcast, but, that really has a significantly lower impact on my blood sugar than a glass of red wine. So massive difference with different kinds of alcohol on my blood sugar. And it's what I found interesting was it's not even as much about did I eat food as like actually what kind of alcohol was it. And then the last thing, now this is something I had mentioned when I did that other episode about are you hungry or is it time to eat? And that is that they're really oftentimes is not as strong of a correlation as I would suspect between my blood sugar and my hunger. And what this told me was, you know, kind of like what I was saying on that episode, that in many ways we are just conditioned into different patterns. And when you start to unpack the conditioning, it's not necessarily based on physiology. And again, this is even why I, you know, have some problems sometimes with things like intuitive eating, because we can get into habits, we can get into conditions, we can get, you know, habituated to a lot of different things. And it doesn't necessarily mean that that's the thing that's right for us or that's good for us. It's just a habit. So I would have a habit of eating meals at certain times, but looking at my blood sugar was still fine, if not even on the high side. Like I didn't need fuel. So if you're looking at your blood sugar, which I do, and I'm not going to say this is like a black and white issue, but I just think this is one really reasonable way to start looking at it. It's like, how much fuel do I have in the tank, right? How much blood sugar is just running around my system, ready to fuel my brain, ready to power my muscles. Like what's just ready to go right now. Right. And if I have fuel on board, I don't necessarily need to put more in, or at least not a whole bunch, like maybe a little bit, but not a ton. And so what I was seeing is like, I might feel like really hungry, but it was more like clock hungry. It was like, I knew that it was time to eat lunch, and lunch seems to be the biggest time for me where this is true. But like my brain would be like, it's lunchtime. And then I would feel hungry, but then I would check my blood sugar and I actually was just fine. Right. So I didn't need fuel at that point, and I could easily wait another 30 minutes or an hour, let my body use up some of the fuel that was already on board, and then refuel, right? So you don't constantly need to fuel if there's already fuel on board. So that was, again, just a reminder. I had seen that before, but to me, this is a little bit of an ongoing process where I'm really starting to try to tap into the relationship between my blood sugar and my hunger. It's one reason I'm wearing this for a little bit longer right now, is it is helping me to fine tune this and to be less kind of that knee jerk reaction of like, okay, it's just time to eat, and really being more in tune with, okay, what does my body actually need? And you know, how much of this is habit or cravings, or I just want something sweet, for example, and not actually like something that my body needs. So those are five lessons that I learned from wearing this CGM, this continuous glucose monitor, for 30 days. So again, there's all different ways to track. You can certainly just go the old school way of tracking with your finger stick if you're interested in finding out some of these things for yourself. You can get that continuous glucose monitor that I've been talking about. But more than anything, what I would love for you to be inspired by is just to be curious about what is true for you, what is true for your body, and where are there bigger patterns that are showing up that you might just kind of be, they're like background noise, you're not paying attention, but you can start to notice if you tap in and you pay attention and you're like checking things out. So that is all I have for you guys this week. I hope you guys had a wonderful Thanksgiving if you're here in the US. Hope you have a great rest of your week and weekend, and I will see you next time. Hey, if you've been on the hormonal roller coaster and want to know how to put the theories and strategies shared on this podcast to work for your body, I want to invite you to join me in my program, The Bitch Fix in Six Steps to Happy Hormones. I'll help you heal your hormones naturally so you can get your mood, energy, and mojo back and live the badass life you were designed for. This is the work I've done with hundreds of women, and it can work for you too. To learn more, go to thebitchfixin6.com. I can't wait to meet you inside.